Doctor Who. Short Trips. Prime Winner by Nigel Fairs. Read by Nicola Bryant. Well, that's the last time I go to Paris, Perry reflected, as the TARDIS console room finally stopped shuddering. The control console emitted its familiar, apparently indifferent, bong, to announce that they'd materialized. Paris hadn't ended well. Uncharacteristically, after several days in the increasingly dangerous city, the Doctor had reluctantly admitted defeat, and they'd torn back to the TARDIS at top speed. If the Doctor's mood hadn't been bad enough then, it worsened considerably when they got caught up in what Perry thought she heard him refer to as a time storm. "That wasn't right at all!" he exclaimed from the opposite end of the room, where he'd been thrown during the not altogether unusually turbulent landing. Perry rubbed her shoulder, prepared to lay money on it being bruised yet again. "So, what's new?" she muttered to herself. "Hmm?" The Doctor was dancing around the console, flicking switches, his eyes darting furiously from one screen to another. She sighed. "Never mind." "So, what happened this time?" They almost collided as he made a sudden movement towards a small dial that was flickering ominously. The Doctor leaned down, tapped it a couple of times, and then straightened up. "That's not good," he announced. "That is not good." Before Perry could ask what wasn't good, he had dashed across the console room, flung open the inner door, and disappeared down a corridor, yelling behind him, "You'll need to wear something blue!" A few minutes later, they had stepped from the TARDIS into what appeared to be an empty hotel foyer. The floor, walls, and regularly spaced columns were all made of shining black marble. The ceiling was domed and decorated with a rather beautiful mural that reminded Perry of the Topkapi Palace in Istanbul. Not that she'd been there. Hearing her enthuse about it on their long flight to the Canary Islands just before she'd met the Doctor, Perry's stepfather had promised to take her. But then Howard had promised her a lot of things that summer. There were five doors leading from the foyer numbered in sequence, and large windows through which they could see an ocean vista as calm as a mill pond. The night sky was remarkably clear, without a cloud in sight. Perry knew that bad weather couldn't possibly have had anything to do with the bumpy landing, yet the Doctor still hadn't explained what had caused it. She knew better than to expect a straightforward answer to any question she might ask, or at least not immediately. He'd flown into something of a minor rage after she'd quipped that his once vibrant blue cloak could do with a dry clean, and he was now intently studying a small, bleeping piece of machinery he'd brought with him from the TARDIS. She decided to take a punt on what she'd heard him mutter earlier on. "So, Doctor, was it a time storm?" He looked up at her with a pained expression. "A time storm?" he repeated. "A time storm? Perry, I sometimes wonder if you ever listen to a single word I say. Time storm." It was clear that he didn't actually know the answer himself. He shook his head and frowned at his bleeping gadget.
"Sorry, I must have misheard you," she murmured.
The Doctor dismissed her with a flick of his hand and moved towards one of the windows. The bleeping became more insistent and then stopped altogether, prompting a frustrated groan. For a moment, Perry thought he might throw it across the floor. Instead, he pocketed it and sat deflated on one of the deep blue leather sofas, staring out of the window. "Nice view," she offered, and then, when she got no reply, sat beside him. "So, are we going to a funeral then?"
"I beg your pardon?"
I thought that was why we're wearing blue." The Doctor appeared utterly baffled.
"Perry, really, does this look like Necros?" "I don't know, Doctor," she snapped. "I get so confused sometimes. We can't all think about a thousand things at once like you."
"More's the pity," he said, rolling his eyes.
I know you get irritated by that sometimes, Perry continued. And if I was you, I'd feel the same way, probably. But perhaps if you told me exactly what was going on sometimes, just sometimes, then I wouldn't have to ask so many dumb questions. I might even be able to help you do something about your time storm or broken console or whatever it is that's gone wrong this time. And I'm sorry I made that gag a joke. I mean, about your cloak. I didn't mean it. But sometimes it's not easy to... That is, I'm not a silly teenager anymore, you know? At least I don't think I am. Oh, it's so difficult to tell living in a time machine, but I certainly don't feel like one. Except when you treat me like one, that is. And you haven't even mentioned my... Oh, forget it. She suddenly realized that she was on the verge of tears. Now she felt completely ridiculous and unable to look the doctor in the eye. Suddenly, one of the doors hissed open behind them, and the sound of chatter and footsteps floated in from beyond. I'm sorry, Doctor, she said quietly. I shouldn't have said any of that. It's just that I bruised my shoulder, and it really hurts. I mean, it's not broken or anything, but... Howard? Perry stood up and called the name again. The tall, handsome man she was looking at, who was surely her stepfather, had come in through one door and was now disappearing among a crowd through another. Doctor, did you see him? It was Howard! I hardly think so, Perry, the doctor interrupted. We're light years away from Earth. It was him, she insisted, heading for the second door just as it closed. It might have looked like him, Perry, but... The doctor's face paled suddenly. Unless... Perry stopped and turned back. Unless what? Unless that was Chameleon, while he was still enthralled to the Master. If we slip back into our own timeline and the Master had something to do with the time storm, we really are in trouble. I thought you said it wasn't a... Yes, I know, he acknowledged, reaching under his cloak and pulling the gadget out again. The dials were unmoving and silent. Scientifically speaking, there's no such thing. Yet a time storm is certainly what it felt like, and whatever caused it is somewhere on this cruiser, I'm sure of it. Cruiser? You mean we're on a ship? Look out of the window, Perry. Though she was anxious to follow Howard, Perry turned to the window where she saw that, yes, the stars were slowly moving, and the ocean... No, it wasn't the ocean at all. What she had taken for sea was actually a vast, shimmering cloud of dust. And beyond the dust... Perry gasped. The Florianopsis Nebula, the doctor murmured suddenly beside her. Or, as the locals would call it, the Third Ring of Sacranax. Beautiful, isn't it? Perry nodded. I thought you might like it, the doctor smiled. A bit of a change after all that nasty business in Paris. Well, that was the idea in any case. We're on a spaceship, Perry stated, immediately regretting it and expecting a sarcastic barb or, at the very least, a haughtily raised eyebrow. But none came. A Sacranax gaming travel cruiser, to be precise, the doctor explained. What I suppose you might call a casino in space. 250 levels, each with 100 gaming rooms. Not where I was intending to come at all. I was aiming for that one. Over there. The SS Magnificent. He pointed to a large, elegant vessel, slicing through the dust cloud beside them. It reminded Perry of the ocean liners that she used to admire, dwarfing the buildings in San Francisco Bay when she was on vacation as a girl. Right, the doctor announced. Let's go and find our friend, shall we? As they stepped towards the door, there was a sudden flash of light from outside. The cruiser rocked dramatically from side to side, sending them toppling to the floor. Another flash signaled another roll. When at last the floor stopped moving, the doctor glanced at the ceiling disapprovingly. That shouldn't have happened, he said, apparently reprimanding the ship in the same way he talked to the TARDIS. Spot of space turbulence? Perry asked ruefully, rubbing her sore shoulder again.
Solar winds, perhaps, the doctor replied, pulling himself to his feet. But they shouldn't have had any effect on this ship. They've obviously got problems with their gravitational compensators.
Maybe it was the solar winds that drew the TARDIS off course, Perry suggested. She received a withering stare and quickly added, or maybe not.
The gaming room was both vast and full of people, the majority of whom were gathered around large green baize tables. Each was dominated by a gleaming robotic figure apparently made of the same black marble as the foyer. The roar of chatter, the squeal of computer game music, and the clatter of coins was almost deafening. As the door slid shut behind them, Perry suddenly felt her stomach lurch. It was as if the ship had been battered by the solar winds again, though nobody else seemed to notice. Pins and needles shot along her arms and legs.
Ow! Doctor! What was that?
He turned to look at her.
What was what?
Never mind.
She wasn't prepared to be ridiculed again. As the doctor strode through the crowd, Perry was bemused to see that people appeared to be stepping aside for him. In fact, she was certain she even saw one woman curtsy. Perry hurried to follow, and it was only when they climbed up onto a small viewing platform that she realized they were the only people wearing blue. The doctor scanned the crowds and then, after a frustrated grunt, asked Perry which man she had mistaken for her stepfather. A sudden cheer rose from a nearby table, followed by the tinny stab of an electronic fanfare.
Prime win! Prime win!
The marble robot squealed. Its head swung open above its mouth to reveal a silver tube, which gracefully swung over the table and deposited a large number of coins in front of a delighted gambler.
There he is, Perry announced, pointing to the winner.
The doctor reacted with his customary bluster.
To my eyes, that doesn't look anything like him, Perry, he boomed.
It does,
Perry protested.
Doctor, you barely knew him.
As if to prove her point, the winner, bathed in bright light, let out a delighted laugh to the jubilant crowd. A laugh that was so like Howard's that Perry shuddered.
I suppose they were different eyes back then, the doctor sighed. But I don't normally forget a face, and that one's not his.
Not exactly his, in any case. Perry still wasn't sure.
Not chameleon, then,
the doctor continued, sounding almost disappointed.
Let's take these readings back to the TARDIS.
As they returned to the empty foyer, Perry followed the doctor's horrified gaze, and together they caught a last glimpse of the TARDIS before its underside disappeared through a large hole in the ceiling. Massive steel shutters snapped together, and it had gone. Seconds later, the doctor grabbed Perry's arm and pulled her behind a large column as yet another of the doors slid open.
More than one prime win in a day is unheard of!
Exclaimed a majestic-looking woman, immaculately dressed in deep purple, to a small creature whose huge yellow ears, wide eyes and a tiny mouth lent him a comically servile appearance.
We must ensure it is the last.
Of course, Collector Covert, the creature nodded. I will see to it immediately.
The woman stopped in the centre of the room.
And the unforgivable turbulence?
We believe the temporary instability was caused by a foreign object, ma'am. In this reception chamber, as a matter of fact, we've had it removed for immediate disintegration.
You can't do that,
the doctor bellowed, stepping out from behind the column.
My ship had absolutely nothing at all to do with the turbulence. You need to mend your gravitational compensators.
Both woman and creature looked momentarily startled, but then, as Perry emerged from behind the doctor, they both bowed nervously. The woman's face
broke into an ingratiating smile as she purred.
"Forgive me, Your Highness. I don't believe we've been introduced. Am I right in thinking that you are the visitors we were expecting from the Fourth Quadrant?
The Sacred Dynasty of,
To her surprise, Perry realized that both of them were addressing not the Doctor, but her. She was at a loss as to what to say. The Doctor shot her a sideways glance before he addressed them.
If I might have the honour of introducing Princess Purpergillian Brown of the Fourth Quadrant, the Sacred Dynasty of TARDIS.
Tardish?
The woman frowned.
Surely that's a... But Your Majesty, we had no idea.
She curtsied deeply, and for a moment the little creature looked as if he was going to fall to his knees.
Please,
Perry said in as imperious a manner as she could manage.
This isn't an official visit. There's no need for any fuss. But if you could just make sure that our ship is, okay...
Oh, of course, Your Majesty, the woman spluttered. We shall see to it at once. Nanch!
The creature nodded frantically and scampered out of the foyer.
In the meantime, the woman cooed, please take a seat here, and I shall arrange a transport, a discreet one, naturally, to the upper levels. If you'll excuse me, Majesty.
Of course, Perry nodded. As soon as they were alone again, she grinned at the Doctor.
I guess that's why we're wearing blue, huh?
So, what do we do now?
The Doctor was staring intently at his gadget, which had started to bleep again. He pointed to the door through which the creature had gone.
We go through there, he said.
After the little guy?
No,
the Doctor replied sternly.
After the source of the temporal disturbance.
You mean you've traced it?
Whatever drew us off course is through there?
Before the Doctor could reply, there was another sudden flash of light from outside. Once again, the cruiser rocked from side to side, followed by another flash of light and another roll.
More solar winds?
The Doctor nodded. Apparently so. And so soon after the last ones.
I think we might be heading into a storm. Come along, Your Highness.
Your Majesty, please.
Beyond the door was another gaming room, as vast and packed with players as the first. Here, too, were tables dominated by gleaming black marble robots. As the foyer door slid shut behind them, Perry once again felt her stomach lurch, and again she had the stabbing sensation of pins and needles. This time, though, she kept it to herself. The sound in here was as deafening as it had been in the first room, and the crowds treated them with the same deference. Now, however, Perry noticed that she was receiving considerably more curtsies and bows than the Doctor, and so she reacted accordingly, affecting a superior but benevolent manner. They made their way onto a platform similar to the one in the first room. The Doctor, looking up from his now silent machine, nudged Perry and tilted his head towards one of the figures in the crowd. It was the man whom she'd taken for Howard. This time, though, he wasn't playing a game, but intently studying one on a nearby table and scribbling discreetly into a small black book as he did so. A huge cheer, and the tinny fanfare emerged from the table.
Bronwyn! Bronwyn!
Its robot squealed. Just then, as before, its head swung open, and a silver tube emerged and splashed coins onto the table. Perry gasped as she realized who the winner was.
It's the same man, she whispered. But that's... I mean, he can't be!
Looking back to where Howard had been standing, she could see no sign of him, until the Doctor spotted someone leaving through the door to the foyer. They immediately set off to follow.
Could they be identical twins? Perry suggested as the crowd parted to let them through.
Twins? Clones? Doppelgangers? Or something fishy's going on?
I didn't see them communicate to each other, though. Did you?
The foyer door slid aside, and the doctor marched through, to be greeted by a familiar sight. The TARDIS was back where it had landed.
"Wow, that was quick work,"
Perry smiled, but then looked up in response to a loud metallic clang from the ceiling. Two discreet shutters had retracted, and from the hole beyond emerged a huge metal arm, swinging over the TARDIS as if it were one of those grab-a-prize arcade games back on Earth. It hovered above them for a moment, and suddenly pounced onto the police box and lifted it out of the room in one precise, smooth movement. The steel shutters closed, and the TARDIS had gone. The doctor looked rather vexed. The door to the second gaming room slid open, and two familiar figures emerged.
"Three prime wins in one day is unheard of," the woman exclaimed. "We must ensure they are the last."
"Of course, Collector," her associate nodded. "I will see to it immediately."
He suddenly bowed as he caught sight of Perry.
"Your Royal Highness."
"Hello again," Perry smiled.
"Forgive me, Your Highness. I don't believe we've been introduced,"
the woman purred.
"Yes, we have,"
Perry replied, then glanced across at the doctor. "Unless..." The doctor stepped forward.
"Collector, if I might have the honour of introducing Princess Purpergillian Brown of the Fourth Quadrant, the sacred dynasty of TARDIS."
"Tardish?"
the woman frowned.
"Surely that's..."
"Your Majesty, we had no idea."
She curtsied, and Perry found herself blushing inexplicably.
"Please," she said. "There's no need, but as I said to, the others, if you could give us back our ship? I mean, I think they already did, but someone else seems to have taken it away again."
"Ship, Majesty?"
the woman asked.
"Yeah, the, blue box you just took into the ceiling?"
She pointed upwards. The little creature's complexion seemed to have become even yellower.
"Majesty, my humble apologies. We wrongly assumed that it was the cause of some temporary turbulence and had it removed. I shall see it is returned to you at once."
"Immediately, Nanch,"
the woman commanded, prompting the creature to flee the foyer.
"In the meantime," she continued, "please take a seat here, and I shall arrange a transport, a discreet one, naturally, to the upper levels. If you'll excuse me, Majesty."
The door swished closed behind her, and Perry turned to look at the doctor.
"More clones?"
she asked.
"Quite possibly," the doctor replied. "I wonder..."
He was interrupted by yet another sudden flash of light from outside. This time, Perry grabbed onto one of the columns, ready for both the first and second roll.
"Those solar winds are really giving us a hammering,"
she said when the floor leveled out again.
"Is the storm getting closer?"
The doctor didn't seem to be listening. He was walking towards the fourth door. As it slid open, he turned to her and said,
"Stay there, Perry. When I get back, I want you to tell me exactly what has happened."
The door slid shut behind him. As it did so, Perry felt her stomach lurch. Pins and needles shot down her arms and legs. And then, to her astonishment, the TARDIS appeared before her in what looked like a puff of smoke. Only it wasn't smoke. Nor was it just around the TARDIS. It was spreading outwards into the room, its shape and colours constantly changing. Perry was alarmed to see that it was taking on the form of a figure. No, two figures. She screamed involuntarily as they appeared just inches away from where she was standing. And then they, and the rest of the smoke, were gone. A tinny fanfare exploded from loudspeakers mounted discreetly around the room. It was the tune that had celebrated the prime wins in the gaming rooms. Muffled cheers sounded from behind one of the doors. Willing the doctor to return, and wondering why, after the way he treated her sometimes, she was always pleased to see him again, Perry jumped as there was a loud metallic clang above her. Just as it had done before, a huge metal arm emerged from a hole in the ceiling and lifted the TARDIS out of the room. The door to the second gaming room slid open.
"Four prime wins in one day is unheard of,"
the woman exclaimed. And all of them on one level in the same gaming session. Someone's head will roll for this, Subcoordinator Nanch.
Collector Covert, I assure you that this has never happened before,
the small creature simpered.
And is most certainly never likely to...
Your Royal Highness!
Ah, there you are, Perry, the Doctor announced several hours later. He strode across to the TARDIS console and flicked a switch. Nothing happened.
Nothing works, Perry told him. Not even the doors. I managed to get in okay, but there's no way we're getting out again.
The Doctor's eyes widened. Perry had never seen him look so worried. He frowned, gently touched the console and lowered his head.
Doctor, where have you been? It's been hours.
Yes, he nodded gravely. Although, strictly speaking, it hasn't, of course. He knelt down beside an ornate chair that he'd borrowed from their hosts back in Paris and retrieved a neatly wrapped package from beneath it. It was a new fob watch he'd bought in the city before all the trouble began. Unwrapping it, he asked, "What happened while I was gone, Perry?"
"The same thing, over and over," she replied. "I thought I was going crazy. Well, first of all, I thought they were going crazy. The woman and the little guy, I mean. They kept saying the same thing, over and over, acting like they didn't know me every time. That is, unless they really were clones. But then why did they come in saying the same thing every time?"
"The same thing?" the Doctor asked, narrowing his eyes.
"Yeah, exactly the same. It was exactly the same every time. The TARDIS taken away, the solar winds, and then there were the ghosts."
"Ghosts?" Perry shuddered.
"Well, that's what they look like. There are more of them every time. Do you think they are what brought us here in the first place?"
The Doctor shook his head gently.
"What happened next?" "Next, there was the fanfare over the speakers. Then the whole thing started all over. After six or seven times, I got so spooked out by the whole thing, I came into the TARDIS and then..."
The console room suddenly shuddered. On the scanner, the room seemed to twist around them, and then it went black. The Doctor's eyes were blazing with fascination.
"We're up in the ceiling again," Perry explained. "In a moment, we'll..."
"Doctor, what are you..."
The Doctor dashed across to the door and punched a roundel to the left of it. The translucent circle clattered to the floor, revealing a metal bar. Lifting it out, he punched another roundel closer to the floor, this time revealing a small hole. Working quickly, he inserted the bar into the hole and started twisting it. The doors inched open slowly.
"Manual override!"
As soon as the doors had opened enough to allow them through, he added, "Come along, Perry. Ironically enough, we haven't got much time." They emerged into a room that had none of the opulence of the foyer or the gaming rooms. In fact, it was filthy, full of machinery caked in oil and black dust. The air was stale and musty. The Doctor grunted, as if it was exactly what he had expected, and once more fished his gadget out from beneath his cloak.
"Yes, the source was definitely on this level," he muttered. "You're absolutely sure that Collector Covert said exactly the same thing every time, Perry. The same words in exactly the same way."
"Well, more or less."
"More or less?" Perry sighed.
"Well, I suppose she got a bit more agitated after it had happened a few times. By the time we'd been through it 10 or 12 times, she was kind of furious. But then so was I."
"Ah, but that's the difference, you see."
Perry didn't understand.
"It hadn't happened to her 10 or 12 times," the Doctor explained. "Am I right in thinking that every time she complained about the prime winds, there were more of them?"
"Well, yes,"
Perry replied, not quite understanding what the Doctor was so excited about.
"What does that tell you?"
Triumphantly, he replied, "Collector Covert was experiencing events every time for the very first time."
Perry was still baffled, and he smiled condescendingly.
The reason I was gone so long is that I was exploring some of the gaming rooms. I also visited the same gaming room a number of times. And this is the important bit. One time there'd be one of him, and the next time there'd be two.
Howard's clones, you mean?
That's just it, the doctor retorted. He didn't have any clones. It was the same man, and he was winning every time. It's the oldest con trick in the book. Realizing that Perry hadn't read that particular book, the doctor sighed and explained as patiently as he could.
Your Howard lookalike gets hold of a rudimentary time manipulator, sets it on a repeat cycle, and then makes a note of the winning combinations of cards, balls, holographic sequences or whatever, depending on the room. When the manipulator loops back to the start of the game, Howard comes back into the room, this time as a player, and wins the game. Only then he gets greedy and decides he's going to do the same thing in the next room, then the next room, and the next, and the...
Suddenly, Perry felt her stomach lurch again and braced herself for the pins and needles as the TARDIS vanished. The doctor, apparently unaffected, let out a satisfied cry as his gadget started bleeping.
I was right! The time manipulator's up here somewhere. All we need to do is find it, and then... Ah!
He pointed to a glowing box, partially hidden beneath a pile of metal rods.
Right, Perry. This is when things get really dangerous.
Dangerous? How?
We're stuck in what you might call a time bubble.
Since we landed, we've experienced the same few minutes again and again and again. It's something only we're aware of because of our unique relationship with time.
Unfortunately, the TARDIS has locked onto the manipulator's cycle, becoming as trapped and unaware of its situation as Collector Covette and her little yellow friend. The only way we're going to release it and escape from the cycle is by bursting the bubble.
His expression grew dark.
And you know what happens when you burst a bubble.
Perry knew better than to actually answer one of the doctor's rhetorical questions when he was in full flow.
It doesn't simply cease to be, he continued. It breaks into hundreds, thousands of smaller bubbles, each of which break into a thousand more.
If we get this wrong, we risk the timeline being permanently damaged, and that could have catastrophic consequences. For a moment, he said nothing further. Either he was deep in thought about the answer to their problem, or he was sulking at the insurmountable nature of it.
So, said Perry, two choices, huh? Either you just turn the time manipulator off, or we somehow stop Howard using it in the first place.
The doctor glared at her with a look that was utterly inscrutable. Then he smiled.
You, Perry, are...
There was a loud squeak of metal, and a door started to open. The doctor pulled Perry behind a grimy tank of engine oil. The door clanked shut, and a man entered, walked over to the pile of metal rods, and pulled the time manipulator out from beneath it. His face glowed in the dusky light.
It was Howard. This should be good, the doctor whispered. At least it will be if I've managed to do what I intend to do as soon as it's finished.
As soon as what's finished? Doctor, what are you talking about?
It was your idea, remember?
He hissed loudly. The man suddenly stood and stared in their direction.
Who's there?
He demanded.
I can hear you. Who is it?
He pulled a gun from inside his jacket.
Come out here or I'll shoot. I will.
Perry noticed that though she didn't recognize his accent, it was definitely not American. The doctor stepped out from behind the tank with his hands up.
There's no need to shoot anyone, he said. If I might introduce myself, Mr. Quenning?
The man blanched.
How do you know my name?
I saw your winning slip, the doctor beamed, hands still in the air.
Well, a number of them, in fact. You've been a very lucky man today, haven't you? Not that luck has had much to do with it.
The man took a step towards the doctor.
Perry yelped, despite herself. Now then, Quenning,
I don't think it would be a very wise move to shoot that thing in here, do you? Not with all the vital machinery. Not to mention the toxic spillage. The doctor nodded towards a hefty metallic piece of machinery, which appeared to be leaking pungent green liquid.
I love your time manipulator, he continued. Bit of an outdated model, but I imagine that's all you could lay your hands on. Now, where would it have been? Somewhere in the Fagabar system? What do you think I am? A grucker? The man spat.
The doctor smiled.
Just as I thought. A Garolinian trader, Perry. Very dodgy lot. Love their gambling. Can't stand the grutches of Fagabar.
It's an ancient grudge, something about a stolen sheep, as I remember.
You probably won the manipulator in a game of cards, eh, Mr. Quinning?
Another door suddenly slid open, sending light cascading into the room. A small troop of uniformed yellow creatures pulled Quinning away from the glowing box and, ignoring his protests, out through the door. Sub-coordinator Nansch looked up at the doctor and Perry with something approximating a smile.
Thank you again, sir, he said.
Then, bowing his head slightly towards Perry, he continued,
Your Majesty, if you don't mind, I'd appreciate it if you left the secondary engine room as soon as possible, whilst my engineers effect a repair.
Of course, the doctor smiled back. We'll be out of here as soon as Her Majesty has prepared herself for her public appearance. Perry scowled at the doctor as he leant forward to add, She has to look just right, don't you know, for her loyal subjects. The little yellow creature nodded, bowed once more, and left. The doctor beamed.
Doctor, Perry began. Do you know what this is, Perry?
He was pointing to the machinery leaking the noxious green liquid. Perry confessed that she had no idea.
It's a gravitational compensator.
A rather broken one by the look of it.
Now then...
Aha! That'll do. He pointed to a large spanner that was lying on the floor, picked it up, and then scooped up the glowing box as well.
Here's the clever bit, he said. I think 15 minutes should do it. Want to come too?
The doctor pressed a number of buttons and levers on the box, offered his hand to Perry, and then told her to
hold on tight.
The room blurred around them. She felt that exact same lurch in her stomach as she'd had in response to previous time shifts. As the room reasserted itself, the pins and needles shot through her limbs once again. The doctor looked around, lifted out his fob watch, and smiled. Then he pointed at the gravitational compensator, which, to Perry's surprise, was undamaged. Motioning for her to step back, he raised the spanner and brought it crashing down. Green liquid spurted out of it and the machinery shuddered. The doctor nodded to himself, satisfied, and then walked from the room. Perry followed. Minutes later, they were back in the foyer, and the doctor was in full flow addressing Collector Covette and Nansch.
The rascal obviously meant to rob you, that's for sure. Although why he damaged your gravitational compensators into the bargain is quite beyond me or Her Majesty, who, incidentally, spotted him in the first place.
He checked his watch.
By my reckoning, he should be arriving up in the secondary engine room any moment now.
You wouldn't want to miss him, would you? Barking instructions, the glamorous woman sent sub-coordinator Nansch scuttling off quickly and then turned to thank the doctor. But there was no sign of either him or Princess Purpa Gilliam. It was as if they had vanished into thin air. Perry took in the view from the luxurious deck of the SS Magnificent and had to admit that she was impressed.
Those ghosts I saw, she started.
The doctor took a sip of his Saccharinac sunset cocktail.
Were us, Perry. Or rather, echoes of us and our gambling friend, as we slipped back to the beginning of the time loop each time. You couldn't focus on them properly because we were ever so slightly out of sync.
Technology like that time manipulator shouldn't be trusted to people who don't know what they're doing. See what happens? Humans!
Perry braced herself for another lecture about the inadequacies of the human race. But instead, she was surprised to feel the doctor's hand reach for hers and gently place a small crystal into it. She raised her open palm slightly, and the crystal changed colour, glistening. It wasn't just reflecting light. To Perry, it seemed to be generating light itself. It was beautiful.
Happy birthday, Perry, he smiled, and then added, although you do realise that, strictly speaking, it isn't your birthday. The people in this star system operate on an entirely different calendar, one that isn't exactly chronological. In fact, far more temporally subjective than that. The doctor saw her expression change slightly and smiled. All the same, when we were in Paris, I heard you ask Madame,
Mademoiselle Depardieu, Perry offered.
Of course. Charming woman. Such a shame about her head. Although, of course, she still had it when we... Yes, well, anyway, I heard you check the date with her before we left Paris, and that's why we're here.
You see, I'm not all bad.
Perry grinned.
Thank you, Doctor, she said. Then, as a shaft of sunlight bounced through the atmosphere shield of the Magnificent's deck, she added, That man did look like Howard, didn't he? Why do you think that was?
The doctor took another sip and glanced across at their fellow passengers.
Coincidence, he replied. That's all. It's a big universe, Perry. It happens.
His expression became animated, and Perry could tell he was about to launch into one of his stories.
By the way, did I ever tell you about this Chancellery guard I met on Gallifrey? Name of Maxil.
Prime Winner by Nigel Fairs was read by Nicola Brandt and is a Big Finish production.